Hey, this is Robert Gibson of the Rock and Roll Express. When I'm around, I listen to the Double Dropkick Show.
Hey, welcome to the Double Dropkick Show. I'm Heath Mulliken.
And lifting those barbell plates and eating them T-bone steaks, I'm Mark Whip.
We are live from the basement of Mole Meadow Farms, my mom's basement.
And enjoying a cold, crisp Mountain Dew.
Mountain Dew in the Solo Cup. We got Fudge Rounds and Star Crunches. And Mark and I have decided if anybody pulled a great heel turn like we talked about a few episodes ago, it was Little Debbie. Little Debbie used to give you your money's worth, and let me tell you, Fudge Round used to feed you up for about 3 days. That thing's like, boy, I get stuck between my teeth. They're so small.
You said it best, man. I'm gonna steal your line. Little Debbie's getting a little stingy.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Hey, we want to welcome you. This is the only wrestling podcast where we talk about the wrestling you grew up with, and today we're talking about the greatest face turn of all time. We've kind of got five or six we want to talk about, and these are going to be ones that most of all you're probably going to remember. Before we get into that, we want to go ahead and tell you about the WWE Network. On our website, doubledropkick.com, there is a Daniel Bryan banner over on the right-hand side. If you click on that, it takes you to the WWE shop, and from there, you can find your way. If you haven't purchased the network yet, please do that. It's not going to cost you anything extra. We're asking you. We're begging you.
I'm down on my knees.
Yes. Mark is down on his knees. He's still taller than me. And we're just saying, hey, take 30 seconds. These two guys and a guy's in his mom's basement just trying to make ends meet.
And we love you.
Take 30 seconds. Go to doubledropkick.com. Click on that banner. Buy a Daniel banner.
Click on that banner. I love it, man.
Yeah.
Got a little Holyfield.
So do that and go and check out the network. And by the time you listen to this, Mark and I have been, immersed in the WWE Network. And we're excited about that.
Wasting days and days.
That's right. We haven't quite wasted 42 days to watch all of the content, but we're getting close. Hey. This is not one-way communication. We want to hear from you. So here's how you can get in touch with the show. You can comment on this post. You can go to doubledropkick.com, click the contact button at the top, send us an email, or you can call 1-864-952-1893. That is our hotline, and you can call with suggestions.
That's not the Mean Gene hotline. We're not going to charge you for 10 minutes to reveal to you that, you know, somebody you don't care about is coming back to WCW.
Right, right. Yeah, we ain't going to charge you $5.99 to tell you to look out for Van Hammer coming to our town near you.
You do not need to get your parents' permission before you call.
No. It's absolutely
I don't still get your parents' permission before you call.
Disclaimer.
So I don't want to get no nasty emails.
So call the show, leave us a message, and we look forward to hearing from you. Go on our website, doubledropkickshow.com, or excuse me, doubledropkick.com. I can't even remember our website. There's our Facebook page there. Click on that and like our Facebook page, and we would, like I said, love to hear from you. Mark, a couple of episodes ago, we talked about the best heel turns of all time, and that was one of my favorite shows.
Yeah, we've only had a few, but, man, that was one of the best.
And I'm excited about this one. Top five face turns of all time. Now, again, we're not putting these in any particular order. And before we get into the list, I want to share this one because this one might be a little overlooked. This is for wrestling really became mainstream. Georgia Championship Wrestling. Dusty Rhodes is having an issue with the Assassins.
Yeah.
Dusty Rhodes goes out there. I think it's with Gordon Solie. He's like, I'm putting my hand out to you. I am putting my innocence.
My hand is touching your hand.
Yeah. And he calls out. He says, I know he's here. And he calls out Ole Anderson.
I have never seen this, man.
They have been blood enemies. And Ole Anderson comes out and says, "All right, Dusty, me and you, I never thought I'd see this." And they shake hands. I mean, before Hulk Hogan and Randy Savage even knew each other.
Yeah, that's right.
Ole Anderson, and who's Dusty been Rose. Never a good. No. They shake hands, and he says, "Tomorrow," and this is what was great. This show, I think, was broadcast on Saturday night. "Tomorrow night in the Omni, Dusty Rhodes and Ole Anderson take on the Assassins. Special referee Gene Anderson, Ole's brother." And they get to the match, and the match starts. And Dusty's in there fighting the Assassins, and Ole is outside. It's in a cage, and Ole's on the apron. And Ole comes in. Because it's a 2-on-1 against Dusty. Ole comes in, and what does he do? Jumps Dusty. And then Gene, the referee, and it's a 4-on-1.
Really?
So it's like for a day, for about 24 hours, you're like, Ole Anderson and Dusty. Ole Anderson's turn. No. So it was like probably the fastest double turn. But if you haven't seen, I mean.
Wrestling fans, it's not a first.
Right.
Because. There's not a whole lot of important things that have happened in the history of wrestling that I have not seen.
Right.
And even if I hadn't seen it, I've probably read a description of it.
Yeah.
I didn't know about that.
Yeah.
Now I'm excited because I was going to take a little break from wrestling for a few days, but now I'm excited because I can go home and YouTube that.
Well, I'm going to tell you, when we get finished recording this episode, we're going to watch it because it's.
You're right.
It's
and, look, and then we'll put it, if we can find it, we'll put it up on our website, doubledropkick.com, so you can see it too if you've never seen
it. So if you're on the website, I'll actually put this video, and we try to post videos, everything we talk about, we try to post these videos throughout the week, but this one we'll put on.
And that's going to come in handy in a couple of shows when we talk to you, and just to, I don't know if you mind me spoiling this or not.
No, you go ahead, spoiler
about
alert.
some of those wrestling matches that you've probably never seen because they didn't take place in the WWE or the WCW or the NWA or ECW. They took place somewhere around the world between stars that you know about.
Yeah.
And that you need to see those matches. And we're going to try to put as many of those matches as we can up on our website so you can see some of what I think are the greatest wrestling matches to ever take place outside of one of the major promotions.
Yeah, yeah. Good stuff. I'm excited for that.
I'm excited for that show, man, because I get to go back and watch those matches again.
I mean, if you think about, and I don't want to get too far off topic, but we're wrestling fans. And so when I hear about something that happened in Japan, or even I got introduced to some European wrestlers that were wrestling. I'm telling you, it's a totally different style.
Japan, a couple of those matches I'm going to tell you about, man, it's surprising that some of those guys were able to walk afterwards as hard as they hit each other and as hard as anything with
it's still real to them.
It is still real to them, yes. Yeah. I mean, the guys in the ring, it is still real to them.
Well, in Japan.
It's a tough training process in there in Japan.
Like, wrestlers are revered as like Michael Jordan. I mean, it's huge. Yeah,
it's huge.
So Mark,
anyway, that's enough about that.
Yeah,
keep me listening.
Mark, what's one of the face turns you want to share?
Well, I just gonna touch on two real quick because we talked about them in our previous shows.
Yeah,
and we don't want to spend a whole lot of time.
Yeah.
Rehashing something that we've already talked about. But one was when Ric Flair turned babyface after Terry Funk. Pile drove him on the table, which led to the Great American Bash that we talked about.
Yeah.
Where Ric Flair was taking on Terry Funk, and previously in the night, Sting had taken on the Great Muta.
Right.
And Muta came out, they jumped on Flair at the end of the match, and at the end, Sting comes out and saves Ric Flair. He had already made the babyface turn, but when he aligned himself with Sting, it put it over the top because Sting was. Because of Flair, was the hottest babyface that they had.
Right.
So when him and Flair joined forces together, it was just phenomenal. And I wanted to say it on the last show, but I didn't get to that. Flair was covered in blood.
Yeah.
And Muta came out and sprayed him
with
green mist, and Ric Flair looked like Christmas morning.
Yeah.
You know, he was just his hair and his chest was covered in green and red, and they brawled. That was the end of the show.
Yeah.
Was they brawled all over the arena, and then the brawl would break up, and then somebody would sling a chair, and the brawl started back up, and Jim Ross was there, and they were interviewing Ric Flair and Sting, and he said, "Come over here, Sting."
Yeah.
And you got to see, and they stood there together.
Yeah.
And Sting didn't really do anything, but you know, you could actually see a point where Flair coached him. He said, go back over there and do the yell.
Yeah.
When I do the woo.
Yeah.
And they walked back to the podium and Flair wooed and Sting did the Sting yell and beat his chest.
Oh, yeah.
And they were aligned and had a good feud with those guys that culminated in the babyface turn.
Right.
Or the heel turn for Flair that we talked about on our heel turn show. So that one I wanted to just touch on but not spend a whole lot of time.
Let me stop right there. And I don't want to go too far off base. But I do want to talk about, because I've heard Ricky Steamboat talk about this, because he and Ric Flair... When Funk goes heel and jumps Flair, Flair and Steamboat had just had this incredible, incredible match.
Yeah, they had a series of incredible matches.
And they could have done that. Oh. And Steamboat talks about, hey, you know, I just lost the belt, and I'm thinking, where do we go from here? And next thing I know, Ric Flair's getting...
Right.
Power driven on a table. And he's kind of like, what in the world? You know, he didn't.
So Steamboat didn't know that was going to happen.
I can't remember where I saw that. At least that's how he sold it.
Right.
This
interview I'm sure.
I saw.
I'm sure.
But
yeah, a lot of those guys, you kind of have to take that stuff with a grain of salt.
But even though that was a good. I mean, think about this. It took Ric Flair getting. That's the first time anyone had ever pile driven on a table. I mean,
it was the first time on that stage. Randy Savage actually pile drove Ricky Morton through a table.
Oh, yeah.
I think in Memphis,
it
was. He had done that a few years previously. So it was not a new thing. But on a national scale, right. I think that was probably the first time anybody had been driven through a table that.
Yeah. I would love to. Maybe we can spend some time. But like at that point, Funk is not. That put Funk back on the map. Yeah. That dude he's probably doing a hardcore match today at Pendleton High School.
Yeah, had kind of forgot about Terry Funk, and I'm going to save my Terry Funk.
I'm not
going to talk about Terry Funk too much because I'm going to talk about him a few shows from now.
Yeah, all right. So, all right. What was the second one you wanted to talk about?
That's my number one. I don't know if it's – we don't rank these things,
but
that's just one of my favorites was Stone Cold.
Yeah.
When at the WrestleMania match there again, you can go back and listen to our WrestleMania Moment show. And you can hear everything about the match, but outside of the match, just the impact that his babyface turn had. And wrestling fans today, I think, are not as patient as we used to be. I'm used to, and we talked about going to Jerry's Video in Pendleton, and a new movie might come out, and they might get two copies.
Yeah.
They get two copies, and if I don't get up there at the right time, I'm not going to get that movie.
Yeah.
So I've already waited a year for it to come out on VHS, and I might have to wait two or three more months for that copy to get in the show.
And Jerry ain't going to hold it.
Jerry ain't going to hold it for you.
I asked him many a time.
Right. He's not going to hold anything for it. He's going to give it to the guy with the money in his hand. So you become patient when it comes to wrestling. We watch those shows. WWF or WWE Raw now is the equivalent of the Clash of Champions that we used to get two or three times a year.
Right.
Where you would see a card on TV that actually had matches where stars fought other stars.
Yeah, what, no jobbers.
There were no preliminary bouts. And you would get those little moments where you might have Rock and Roll Express versus the Russians, or you might get a match that focused on Barry Windham versus Ric Flair. And you did get those occasionally.
Yeah.
But it was not a given that when you tuned in to watch WCW Saturday Night, or you watch Worldwide Wrestling, or you watch WWF Superstars, that you were going to get anything with any stars.
Yeah.
You see Hulk Hogan maybe cut a promo.
Right.
But you were not going to see Hulk Hogan wrestle Randy Savage on WWE Superstars.
No.
So you're basically with Raw getting a Clash of Champions level card every week.
You're spoiled.
With SmackDown.
Yeah.
So there's no patience
with
wrestling. We want what we want right now, and if you don't give us what we want right now, we're going to ruin this show.
Well, yeah. It goes back. When you and I started wrestling, and again, I didn't have cable. I got 2 hours of wrestling a week. I got an hour of NWA
on Saturday.
And
even with cable, I didn't get a whole lot more than that.
Right. So I got an hour on Saturday, hour on Sunday. Now, on those two shows, they would show you what happened on World Championship Wrestling from Georgia that was on TBS. They show you clips from that. But again, you're talking 2 hours a week. That's about 100. I mean, I'm not a math major.
Not a mathematician.
But that's just a little over 100 hours a year.
Yes.
A year.
Absolutely.
Now, you're getting 7 hours a week.
That's just on TV. We talked about it a while ago. We want to see this Dusty Road, and we're going to watch it when we get done with the show, just like that, on demand. So we have, wrestling fans have gotten accustomed, like I said, we get what we want. Stone Cold Steve Austin turned babyface at WrestleMania 13.
Yeah.
It was a year later before he became the champion at WrestleMania 14.
And that was his first shot at the time.
No, it wasn't his first shot. No, it wasn't his first shot. But that's the point. Right. It was not his first shot at the title.
Right.
He had a match, the four-way match, before WrestleMania.
Gotcha. Forgot about
that. He had wrestled, I think, and if I'm wrong, I'm going to be wrong.
Right.
He had wrestled Michaels for the title, maybe on Raw. He wrestled Undertaker one time.
Yeah.
Before WrestleMania, but he lost those matches because you have to condition fans to accept someone as a main eventer.
Yeah.
You can't just, because we've seen it with guys like Jack Swagger, you can't just put somebody in the main event, give them the champion, and then be legitimate.
Yeah.
You have to condition the fans to not just accept them in the main event, but to want to see them in the main event.
Yeah.
And that's what they did and that's what they're doing with Daniel Bryan.
Yeah.
We talked about you like the t-shirt, which you can get on WWE Shop by following the banner on our website. It's just a shameless plug.
Yeah, that's right.
The t-shirt.
Yeah.
Vince McMahon tweeted about Daniel Bryan the other day. Daniel Bryan and Stephanie McMahon did an interview with USA Today. You and me and all the wrestling fans are conditioned to accept Daniel Bryan as a main eventer now.
Yeah.
Don't be surprised if he walks out of WrestleMania holding that title.
Right.
Don't be surprised if they don't figure out a way to have him, and if not there, the following pay-per-view.
Yeah.
He will be the champion before this, and he will get a run with the belt, but they had to do it right.
Yeah.
You can't just plug somebody in because John Cena says, hey, some people are responding to this guy. Yeah. We're going to give him a title. He's going to win. You had to make people want to pay to see him.
Yeah.
That's because the wrestling business is not necessarily about giving you what you want all the time, because if you give your kids birthday cake every day for breakfast.
Yeah.
Because they want birthday cake for every day for breakfast. It's going to take about 3 days before they say, hey, can we have bacon and eggs tomorrow?
Right.
Because I'm tired of birthday cake.
That's exactly right.
You have to make people want to pay.
Yes.
So anyway, the reason I want to talk about the Austin without talking about the match was to talk about the almost 2-year build of Steve Austin to get him ready to be the champion.
Yeah,
at WrestleMania, and for people to then say, all right, we can get behind this guy.
Yeah, what if people, because you and I said it in one of our, when we saw Steve Austin in Anderson, South Carolina, him and Flying Brian, the Hollywood Blondes, that dude had it. And let me tell you, he comes into the WWF as the ringmaster. Yeah,
I could not believe
it. What in the world?
Oh, I was so excited when I heard Austin was coming, because I said, man, they're going to do something with this guy.
And here's the thing. He had come off. He was injured when he got fired.
Right.
And we're way off topic. But, dude, I don't care.
Like,
we're talking about what we want to talk about.
We call this in the ring.
That's right. That ECW promo he cut.
Oh,
good
man.
Gravy.
You're talking about. If you want to see Stone Cold before. You want to see the layers of the onion of Stone Cold Steve Austin start to come out. Go watch those ECW promos that he cut, man.
Right. Like if you're trying to get a PhD in wrestling psychology and promo work, that's part of your course.
That's it.
Work.
And that is, they hung a black curtain behind him. And I may be wrong about the guy.
He was wearing a fanny pack, I think, when he cut that pro.
I mean, you talking about a emotional, he wasn't yelling.
No.
He wasn't screaming. I heard Jake Roberts one time when he talked about, way off topic, but talking about promo skills, and he got talking real quiet.
Yeah.
And he said, you feel the way you're leaning in right now so you can hear what I say? Imagine what I'll do when I get my hands on you if I can control you that much with my voice.
Oh, yeah. Dude, I'm sure we'll have I'm sure when we get closer to Hall of Fame weekend, you will definitely have to do a Jake Roberts.
Oh, you're gonna hear about Jake Roberts here in a few minutes.
Oh, yes. Yes, that's right. That's right. Well, let me okay, I'm just trying to look at my list. Let me share one, and then we'll get – because I had on my list, I had the Stone Cold one. I had Flair and Funk. Let me share one. And this – I'm not trying to say this is one of the greatest – face turns of all
time.
This
is what you like.
Right.
This is what appealed to you. That's what we're talking about.
What stuck in my memory, and again, in 1985, I think it was 85, I had never watched WWF before. Didn't have cable. They just had the first WrestleMania, and now they're having the first Saturday Night's main event. The first WrestleMania, it's on my list of top five WrestleMania matches, not because it's great, because it's just kind of
historic.
It's in history.
It's a historic night.
But Paul Orndorff loses the match. I think he gets hit by Bob Orton, who was, you know, that was the third year of the broken arm angle, I think. And so on Saturday night's main event, they do a Piper's Pit.
And that had cross promotions, by the way. Wasn't like he got his arm broke in one promotion, and then when he went to another promotion, he quit selling it. He got it broke in one promotion, went to another promotion, and continued to wear a cast on his arm.
Orton. Talk about underrated.
Wrestlers don't have a commitment to their art form anymore, man.
No, they don't.
I bet he wore that cast out of the bar.
Oh, absolutely. And, I mean, it's a cast. I mean, it's not like a Velcro. I mean, it was like legit. It was a legit cast. Right. All right, so Roddy Piper, he's doing Piper's Pit, middle of the ring, and I've never seen this before. I don't even know who Paul Orndorff is. But he's interviewing Paul Orndorff. And I remember, he doesn't have a shirt on and doesn't have what wrestling trunks on. He's got on, like, Miami Vice shorts on and, like, white shoes. But
penny loafer.
But you see that Roddy Piper's blaming him for the loss. And Paul Orndorff turns on Roddy Piper, turns face, crowd goes nuts. And what you don't realize there is they're setting up Orndorff to team with Hogan and then go heel on Hogan. I see a pattern for me.
Yeah, to follow the pattern. Yeah.
But for me, I put that on here just because that is the first WWF show I ever watched in my entire life.
That's cool.
And I remember that. And I remember just the emotion of that. I'm like, what in the world? Who is this guy? And, man, yeah, get him. Get Roddy Piper, because you just, hated Roddy Piper. He was, and that's what made him... that's what made him a great heel. And let me tell you, if you want to find out more about Roddy Piper,
where can they find out about it?
And you've already signed up for the WWE Network. Let me tell you something else. If you go to, again, two options here, Double Drop Kick Show. Excuse me. It's the Double Drop Kick Show website, doubledropkick.com/prime. It's going to take you to where you can sign up for a free...
He said free.
That's right. Free 30-day trial of Amazon Prime. Now, here's what Amazon Prime does for you. Amazon Prime, when you order anything off of Amazon, you get free 2-day shipping. I just bought something this week, free 2-day shipping. You get...
And I'll tell you, man... If you don't, that's a big deal if you shop on Amazon a lot, because if you have to spend $25 to get free shipping, and most of the stuff on there, if you want something that's $5 or $6, then you wind up paying an additional $4 or $5.
Right.
I signed up for Amazon Prime about a year ago, and I don't know how much money I have saved.
Yeah.
Things that I've been able to buy that I normally wouldn't have bought on Amazon because I would have had to pay the shipping.
Once the 30-day trial is over, it's $79.99 a year. If you shop on Amazon a lot, you know,
you just pay that one time.
Right.
You just pay it one time.
Yeah.
And, you know, I love the, I didn't mean to cut you off there. You were doing so good.
You're good.
I love the on demand.
Yes.
Movies.
Yeah.
And the
I watched one.
I love the Sons of Anarchy, Justified, American Horror Story. I like those shows, and I don't have to buy the DVDs when they come out. I don't have to wait. Watch it on TV. I can just go there and watch it for free.
Now, I'm going to tell you, I was, again, trying to research for, so I was looking for War Games. Mm-hmm. And I'll go ahead and tell you, I'm going to be straight up. You can order instant video, all the WWF stuff, WWE, excuse me, is on instant video. It's not on the free.
Yeah, it's not free. You have to pay for it.
But I'm just searching for war games.
But if you got the network that you signed up with through DoubleDropkick.com, you're not going to need access.
But I was looking for war games, found the Matthew Broderick movie. Had never seen it, watched that last night. But there are a lot of great wrestling documentaries completely free on Amazon Prime. You talk about TV shows. So much. And again, DoubleDropkick.com/Prime or on our website on the right hand side, there's a huge long banner that says Amazon Prime. Click on that. Again, doesn't cost you anything extra. It's a 30-day free trial. You help people out. You click on that and you buy some off Amazon, you help us out. And you know,
it doesn't cost you a thing. They're not extra hidden fees there.
No hidden fees. Listen, no hidden fees. We're not going to Vince Russo you and charge you, you know, no hidden fees. So, anyway, please help us out. Again, that's Amazon Prime, DoubleDropkick.com/Prime, or click on the banner. So, here we go. Let's get into a couple of the face turns that some of the fans on Facebook let us know about. One that I saw here, and I don't necessarily remember this, when the Spirit Squad took this is from Isaac Ibarra. Thank you, Isaac, for commenting on our post. When the Spirit Squad took HBK out and McMahon wanted Triple H to destroy HBK, but they joined together, DX Reform. That was pretty good. Here's another older one. Ted DiBiase was a heel for a long time in Mid-South.
Oh, this is great, man. I have got the Legends of Mid-South DVD. Man, I watched this match a few months ago.
So who is he wrestling when he turns face? Because I'm behind on that.
What happened was Dick Murdoch was acting as his mentor, his coach in the business, and Ric Flair showed up in the territory because, there again, Flair was a traveling world champion, and Mid-South was part of the National Wrestling Alliance. So Flair showed up to give a shot to the local star. Dick Murdoch comes out, and he tells DiBiase, hey, man, this ain't your time. This is my time. I'm the legend here. I'm the boss, and you're going to do what I tell you to. And DiBiase says, but it's my shot. Murdoch says, I don't care that it's your shot. What I'm telling you is you're not going to take it. I'm going to take it. DiBiase says, I'm taking it. Yeah. He hits DiBiase, and he posts him. Yeah. DiBiase juices himself, and he cuts himself too deep.
Yeah.
And he goes back to the locker room, and when he cut, they call it on the DVD the Spirit of 76.
Yeah.
Do you know what that means?
No.
I don't either. I would like to find if anybody knows what they mean by he comes out and did a Spirit of 76, because I don't think it's a wrestling reference. It's a reference to something from history.
Oh, I know exactly what it is. It's when, you know, the Revolutionary War, you got the picture of the guys playing the instruments, and one of them's got that bandage.
Okay, well, that's what I'm thinking. Well, that's what it is then, because he comes out with his head bandage.
That's it.
And he's got like the white tape wrapped all around his head, but he's still bleeding through the tape.
Yeah.
And then he goes on to have an incredible match with Ric Flair, and which was his babyface turn.
Yeah.
And he, there again, Ric Flair's the greatest of all time because he went to Mid-South and he left it better than he found it.
Yes.
Because now they had a new top babyface in Ted DiBiase.
Yeah, when Flair leaves after that match, people are not talking about Flair; they're talking about DiBiase.
They're talking about the fact that DiBiase should have beat Flair.
Yeah.
They're not talking about wow, Ric Flair had a great match. They're saying our guy should have beat Ric Flair.
Yeah, and one that people may not remember, I think this was late 70s. When Dusty Rhodes started out, he was a bad guy.
Yeah, because he even did a promo one time where he said, "Brother, before they loved me, I was bad, and they knew I was bad."
Yeah, he was in the Texas Outlaws with Dick Murdoch, and I think this is on. There was a, it looked like a bootleg tape, but there was a Dusty Rhodes Living the Dream DVD from a lot of the Florida stuff, and I don't remember how it all happened, but Pac Song was the guy. And Dusty Rhodes turns face, and that was it. I mean, that took Dusty to a whole another level. And then most of the other ones that I'm seeing here are ones that we're about to share with you. So let me share a one again. You may not remember it's July of 1987, and there's this startup, not a startup company. Mid-South has transitioned has become the UWF and the Universal Wrestling Federation. Now, when it transitioned to that, they got syndicated. So I remember, I think it was Channel 40, they were nation that enabled them to go nationwide as far as TV. And so now this Mid-South wrestling that had been more territorial, now in the end, this bankrupted their company. But let me tell you, the old UWF, and some of those matches I think are on the Mid-South.
Yeah, they are.
That what I like one of the best 1 hour shows you'd ever seen.
I like to refer to it, and I think I said it one time before, as snot bubble wrestling.
Snot bubble wrestling, yeah. And when you started watching UWF, there was this guy on there, and his name was Sting. And Sting,
the singer?
No.
Oh.
But it was a man named Sting.
I thought he was just started out in the Police.
Now Sting the singer, a lot of people don't know this. Great ring cardio. A lot of people don't know
that. That's what I've heard.
So anyway, you had Sting, and he's with Eddie Gilbert, Hot Stuff Incorporated, and Missy Hyatt, and they've got this group. Rick Steiner's in there. Sting's won the belts, the UWF belts, with Eddie Gilbert, who. If I was going to be real, I'd be Hot Stuff Heath something. I mean, just loved Eddie Gilbert.
Really?
And then he wins the belt with Steiner.
Can I ask why you loved Eddie Gilbert? Because
he was such a small guy, and just I don't know that he could really.
Same reason I like Big Van Vader.
Right. I don't know that he was the greatest worker, great talker. And great thinker in the business.
Yeah, I've heard that about him. That he had a great mind.
There was something always. I didn't know. I was all never really really loved him. Never really really. I guess I really did. I did hate him when this happened, because Sting's wrestling Terry Taylor, and Terry Taylor's turned heel against his partner Adams, and Sting and Eddie Gilbert comes in and they jump Sting, and Sting turns face. Now, why is this on my list? Because most people don't remember that Sting was a heel. And so since 1987, there have been times where Sting has, quote, unquote, been in a heel faction. Main Event Mafia.
Yeah, but he's not a good heel. Some people are just – Ricky Steamboat was never made to be a heel. I don't think Batista is meant to be a babyface.
Right. Yeah, totally.
I don't think Randy Orton is meant to be a babyface. Right. They naturally play certain roles better.
Yes.
And Sting is a natural. Right. People want to pull for Sting. And when you try to go against the grain and make him a heel, it has never worked.
And so that's why this turn, his career goes a completely different direction, in my opinion, because of this turn. And Sting, I mean, my hope is, again, that he's signing some kind of deal with WWE.
I hope so. I think he deserves
that.
It.
In 2015, he's going into the Hall of Fame when it's out in California. But to me, that's why this turn. I mean, most people don't remember it, but it was.
I do.
Turn
I remember seeing that.
It just. And within a year, Clash of Champions with Flair, and that was it.
Yeah, and if you don't know about Clash of Champions with Flair, man.
45 minutes.
I can't tell you nothing about wrestling.
Yeah,
if you don't
yeah. Know. If you just signed up for the network,
that's one of the first things you need to watch.
Go watch.
If
that
they
right
put
now.
Clash, if you like, I would say go watch. Find it on YouTube.
Yeah.
If it's not on the network,
yeah.
Find it on YouTube, because that is a match that's worth watching.
And that's a match that. We'll talk about. We've got several shows planned.
Oh
now,
yeah, yeah. We're gonna talk about that.
Am I correct in saying that match has a dusty finish, kind of, sort of, because they have the judges.
Yeah,
and Jason Hervey
and Eddie Haskell is a judge. Sandy Scott,
but
and then
Jason
there's a penthouse
Hervey
pit.
Votes for the match to be a draw. And so
yeah, that was the stupidest thing. Yeah, I thought the same thing, man, when I watched it.
So let's Mark talk about you kind of have a series of turns. Or go ahead.
Here's what I want to. What I think we should do. Because that's going to take me a little time.
Yeah. I'll go ahead and do mine.
We both have this one on our list, and I think you'll describe it just as good as I could, probably better than I ever could.
Yeah.
So you talk about that one.
We mentioned that in the early 80s, it was Rocky IV season, USA versus Russia. There's really not nowadays, I mean, there's still guys you can't chant USA from, but we really don't have any true enemies in the world now, but in the early 80s.
And when they tried to do it with Muhammad Hassan a few years ago, with making an enemy out of somebody that we were actually at war with, it did not go. It was a public relations nightmare for that company.
Yes. But in the 80s, you had this young guy. I can't remember if it was late 84 or early 85, Nikita Koloff.
Who, by the way, other wrestlers in other territories would say, did you guys hear they got a shoot Russian down in Crockett Promotions? Everybody believed Nikita Koloff was from the Soviet Union. Yeah. Not just fans, other wrestlers. Yeah. He sold that gimmick. He lived that gimmick.
I got to, and hey, let's just peel back the curtain. I think his real name was Scott Simpson.
Yeah.
From the Minneapolis area. He knew, I think he was friends with the Road Warriors and Crusher, you know, Barry Darso, Crusher Khrushchev, those guys. That's kind of how he got in. I got to spend a day with Nikita Koloff and Magnum TA. My buddy was doing a documentary about their kind of series, and just one of the nicest guys you'd ever meet. And you talk about, but in 84, 85, he comes in, and Ivan Koloff's Russian, and he's kind of on the way out, and he's teaming with Don Knoodle. And Don Knoodle is the U.S. trader. And they turn on Knoodle, and Nikita comes in, and Nikita is just this monster. Oh, he is.
He was believable in that role,
and
man.
And the way, oh, the daughter, you Uncle Ivan,
you bring your mother to the press conference.
I mean, they did the press conference, and he, dude, I'm telling you, there was, during that time span, The you woke up in the morning hating Nikita Koloff and you went to bed hating Nikita Koloff because he represented everything that was evil in the world.
That's right.
Because he was Russian, he was a bad guy. Just a bad. I mean, I don't know that there's there. I mean, he was just hated.
I'll tell you how good he was.
Yeah.
You mentioned Rocky IV.
Yeah.
There were two guys up for that role of Ivan Drago, Dolph Lundgren and Nikita Koloff.
Really?
Yeah.
Did not know.
And I am 99%. Confident saying that I have heard Stallone mention that somewhere before, that there was a wrestler who was a and I'm very, very confident in saying that he was up for that
role. Well, anyway,
because Stallone had so much success with Hogan because they didn't have to coach Hogan on how to do that.
Right.
When he come in, there were no act. It just, they put him in the ring, and it was and he thought, well, if we can get another wrestler, it'll be a natural fit for him too.
So, 1986, Mark mentioned the press conference. They're going to do press conference for a title match between Magnum TA and Nikita Koloff. Nikita insults Magnum's mother. Magnum jumps across the table and attacks Nikita. And again, it's like Bob got the president, conduct unbecoming a champion.
You are formally reprimanded.
And they held the title up. And
well, they didn't hold the title up because of what happened at the press conference. They held the title up because he attacked Bob Gottlieb.
That's right. That's right. Okay. So they hold the title up because when he reprimands Magnum TA.
Magnum TA says, loses. Go ahead. Reprimand this.
Yeah.
And he punches him in the mouth.
Oh, that. Dude. Yes, yes, yes. So, yes, yes, yes. So they plan over the Great American Bash. It's a tour. They're going to have this best of seven series. And the first three.
Have you ever seen all of those matches?
No.
There are some that exist on video, but not all of them, right?
The deciding match was on a Sunday afternoon. They showed it on TV. It was very interesting. Magnum said, "Yeah, we went out to do a best of seven series, but ended up having 10 or 11 matches."
That's kind of what I figured that they sold that it was one of the seven everywhere they went.
You know, so if they're at a house show or whatever, Nikita, oh, dude, they played it. So Nikita wins the first three. Magnum wins the second three. The final match, match number seven, Nikita wins, hits Magnum with the chain, pins him, and you have a Russian as the United States heavyweight champion. I want you to let that sink in.
And a young Heath Mulligan went to bed sulking that night.
And I just remember when he hits Magnum with that chain,
I wish you folks at home could see what I see right now, because there is not a man sitting across from me right now. There is a kid who had his heart broken, and I can read it all over his body language right now.
Now, what I didn't know then is they were getting the belt off of Magnum. Magnum went into a program with Jimmy Garvin, and then didn't know this at the time. We're going to talk about our Dream Starrcade. Magnum's Nikita gets the U.S. title because Magnum's owned a bigger. Magnum's going to be the champion.
Right. Yeah. You didn't know that at the time, but the plan was that Magnum TA would face Ric Flair and become the world champion.
Yeah, at Starrcade 86. Yeah. So I got to spend the day with Nikita and Magnum, and
wow.
And found, I said, hey, you were doing a program with Jimmy Garvin. And he said, yeah. He said, I said, man, we used to go see you guys in Greenville all the time. He's like, yeah, my last match was in Greenville. And I said, was it an Indian strap match with Jimmy Garvin? He said, yeah, it was. I said, you came out of the ring. I rushed over to where you came out, and you shook my hand. And I remember this because he was looking around. He was just soaking it in.
Right.
And he doesn't look at me, but he shook my hand, got blood on my hand. I mean, got blood on me. I'm telling you, this is why this is so personal.
Right.
Because I'm sitting there, and then on the way home that night, Magnum TA is in a wreck and almost dies, is almost paralyzed. He still doesn't have very good use of it. I think his right side's pretty messed up. But, I mean, he has a – if you'd have told me 20 years ago, 30 years ago, hey, you know, he's got a much better quality of life than we thought he would have at the time.
Right.
But I
remember crying when I heard about
that. Oh yeah,
I really did.
You remember Tanya Sanders came in? We're in middle school, and she comes in. She's like, "You hear about Magnum TA?" Like, what about Magnum TA? Just saw him last night, and it was wasn't in the paper the Tuesday. It was in the paper Wednesday because I saw him wrestle a Monday. So anyway,
my father told me, he's like, "Son," because he knew how.
Yeah,
like I need to tell you that Magnum TA got hurt really bad.
And this Nikita's over because Magnum TA was the South's Hulk Hogan. That's how over he was. So anyway, I'll never forget, within a week or two, you turn wrestling on. And the match, Dusty Rhodes is walking to the ring, and Nikita Koloff is behind him.
He's following him.
And Dusty Rhodes gets in the ring against two of the horsemen. I can't remember which two.
I think it was Arn and Ole.
Yeah.
It could have been Arn and Tully, but I think it was Arn and Ole.
And Dusty gets in the ring, and he starts fighting. And Nikita walks into the cage, and everybody's just thinking, this is going to be a 3-on-1.
Yeah.
And Nikita stops, and I'm telling you, man, you can't teach this.
Yeah.
Just the way he looks at the crowd and the way he goes into the ring, and he jumps on the horse.
And he went from, like, 0 to 100 in a split second.
Yeah, and if there were people, if you had to list, just we talked about this when Hogan turned heel. You'd be like, no. Same thing with Nikita.
Yeah.
He can't be
inconceivable.
And he joins Dusty Rhodes. And so they showed that clip, and then they showed Dusty and Nikita in the studio.
Yeah, with Bill Apter interviewing him.
He said, many times you have heard Dusty Rhodes say for him, there is no law.
Yeah.
And Nikita say for him, there is no rules.
Yeah.
I fought this Magnum TA.
I got the eye.
And I began to respect this man.
Yeah.
You know, it was incredible.
And it was believable. I mean,
here's why it was believable. Nothing about Nikita Koloff changed except the fact that he had respect for Magnum TA.
Yeah.
And that was what it was. He didn't come out on a promo and say, from now on, I'm, you know, I'm all this and I'm all a white bread baby face. He said, I don't listen to the Kremlin anymore.
Yeah.
And I don't listen to my Uncle Ivan anymore. Yeah. Nikita makes his own rules.
Yeah.
When he said there's no law, what he meant was the Kremlin's not telling me what to do anymore.
Right.
I did this because I respect Magnum TA enough.
Yeah.
Because he earned my respect because he was a man. But they talk about it in the interview. Dusty Rhodes said, that don't mean I believe everything.
Yeah,
Nikita Koloff believes.
Yeah.
And Nikita Koloff don't believe everything I believe. But that's what makes this country great. Yeah. We can have differences of opinion and still respect one another.
Yeah. It's like Nikita doesn't start waving in America.
He still wears the Russian stuff. Yeah, he didn't change who he was, just the fact that he respected Magnum TA enough to help Dusty Rhodes.
But if you can watch, you know, that first 10 minutes of that show, I would, for me personally, Heath Mulligan, I would put that 10 minutes of TV, of wrestling television, against any 10 minutes ever anywhere in the history of wrestling as far as...
I agree.
As far as where it was. But again...
A crowd reaction, just a emotional... Because there was... I mean, that... If you were a wrestling fan in the South... And I don't know that you could appreciate it if you lived in other parts of the country, how big Magnum TA really was.
Right.
And the kids, I'm sure, just like a lot of other guys, probably if you were a 20-year-old male, Magnum TA probably didn't appeal to you a whole lot. But if you were a lady or if you were a kid, man, Magnum TA was it, man.
And what was crazy is there were a few times after that, Nikita turned back heel. But it never was as hot.
Yeah. It didn't work. And he did the War Games. You talked about watching the War Games, which Meltzer gave the 5-star review to that War Games, where he comes into the ring and he almost replayed that babyface turn because he had kind of been feuding with Sting. And he comes in and everybody says, all right, he's on Sting's team.
Yeah.
But is he going to help Sting?
Right.
And he did the same thing. He stood there and then he came to his aid and him and Sting hugged. And then they went and, you know.
And here's the thing. And this is... This happened at a time when the curtain had not been pulled back on the business. Nikita Cole, I mean, I got to spend the day with him. The dude bought my lunch. I mean, I'm not saying that to brag. I'm telling you.
He's a good man. There's a lot of those guys that I think have got into preaching.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure that there's not a little bit of
shadiness.
I don't question anybody, but. From what I can tell about Nikita Koloff, he means it. You know what I mean? He's serious about it.
And so when I was, I mean, he told me his first wife who died of cancer, she did not. This is from Nikita telling me, and I don't know if he's shooting at me because I'm a mark. I don't know if he's working me. This is what
I doubt it. I think he's so far removed from the wrestling business.
He told me she did not know. He was in character so much, she didn't know that he wasn't Russian until the night they got engaged. That's what the man told me.
I don't doubt it, man.
I'll tell this one last Nikita Koloff story because he told us we were at lunch. He got a speeding ticket. He's going to court to challenge his speeding ticket because he thought he got pulled over because he was in a sports car.
Right.
So he's got one of his daughters with him. He's in the courtroom, and the judge is like, Mr. Koloff, you're going to have to pay this ticket. He's like, Nikita, no pay. Nikita, no pay. It's like, Mr. Koloff, you were caught speeding, going over the speed limit, and you're guilty. You got to, Nikita, no understand. No pay. Nikita, no pay. And the judge, he finally goes back and forth to the judge, the officer, and finally the judge is like, tell you what. I'll let you off. You just tell me, what was it like to be in the ring with Ric Flair? But it's like the dude, you talk about contempt of court. I mean, you're talking about
he's a guy like David Crockett over there. Look, watch him, look. All right, look at what he's doing now.
But you're talking about a judge, a grown man. He's got to know that guy's not from Russia. Yeah.
You would think.
I mean, he's like, whoa, 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 son. I get it.
Okay.
You're talking regular. Because here's the thing. When I first met him, I walk up to him, and we're at Magnum TA's office. And he walks up and is like, hey, I'm Nikita. And I'm like,
no, you're not. No, wait.
that's one of the highlights.
I bet that was awesome. I wish we had been in contact more back then.
What was it like? My buddy who's a filmmaker called me that morning. It's like, what are you doing today? I said, well, you know, just chilling. And he said, hey, let's go to Charlotte. Well, what are we doing in Charlotte? It's like, we interviewed Magnum TA, Nikita Koloff. I'll be there in 5 minutes. And so that's kind of my one. And Mark, you've got... You got several that kind of tie in together. We got time.
You got time? You want to do it? We can make it a two-part show if we got to.
That's right.
You know,
because
the story that I'm going to tell you it's two baby face turns, a heel turn, and two guys getting fired from the WWE.
Yeah, right.
It's a long story.
Yeah. Go ahead and tell it.
So one of my moments, I'm not going to talk a whole lot about the match or the turn.
Right.
Because we discussed it in our WrestleMania moments.
Right.
It was when Randy Savage and Ultimate Warrior had their retirement match.
Right.
And you had Sherry Martel kicking Savage when he was down. Elizabeth jumps the barrier. She comes in, saves him. They go through all that. That's not the babyface turn I want to talk about.
Right.
That just sets in emotion, the babyface turn that I want to talk about.
Yeah.
Because then you had Savage become a commentator.
Right.
But you also had them occasionally letting you know what was going on with him and Miss Elizabeth.
Mm-hmm.
And it leads up to her saying, "Will you marry?" Elizabeth, will you marry me? You know, and I remember him. It was a weird cadence, the way he delivered it. Like, it was really cool. So he said, "Will you marry?" And they set the marriage for SummerSlam.
Yeah. A match made in heaven, a match made in hell.
That's right. Who was Hogan and Warrior were fighting? Sergeant Slaughter and maybe the Iron Sheik.
It was three, and there was a 2-on-3, I think.
It was something like that.
Adnan, maybe.
Yeah, that's right. So. But before all that, before we get to SummerSlam, let's rewind it a little bit.
Patience.
Because you had a new guy that had made his way to the WWF on Ted DiBiase's Survivor Series team as the special guest mystery opponent. And his name was The Undertaker.
Yeah.
And he entered into a feud with the Ultimate Warrior. And they put him in a casket. And for the first time, Warrior sold being scared of something.
Yeah.
Also at this time, Jake the Snake's snake had been crushed by Earthquake, and he had a new snake. Do you remember that snake's name?
No.
Lucifer, the devil himself. So he had a new snake that he had debuted. And he went on to the funeral parlor one night, and Paul Bearer began to insult Jake Roberts.
Jake Roberts!
Oh, Mr. Snake Man! And he says, "Hey, Paul Bearer, why don't I tell the Ultimate Warrior a little something about the dark side? Maybe I'll teach the Ultimate Warrior about what he needs to do to combat your guy, the Undertaker." "Oh, no, Snake Man, please don't do that." You know, and so Jake Roberts lets the Ultimate Warrior know.
Yeah.
"Hey, if you need some help, I'll teach you to fight your fears, and I'll teach you about the dark." Because that's where the Undertaker was billed as being from the dark side.
Yeah.
Okay. So the Ultimate Warrior says, okay, and he called him Snake Man. He never called him Jake or Jake.
Yeah.
He always says, "Okay, Snake Man, you know, and you can help me." So he takes him, and they do a series of vignettes. And the first one, they take the casket that the Ultimate Warrior had been buried. I don't know. Did I mention that on the funeral parlor they locked the Ultimate Warrior in the casket?
Right.
I don't know. That was kind of what set it off. They locked the Ultimate Warrior in a casket. So they took that casket and shot a vignette with Jake telling the Ultimate Warrior, "If you want to learn to conquer your fears, you need to get back in that coffin.
Yeah.
And I'm going to close it up on you." And they sit, and the Ultimate Warrior's scared of being in there, and he's selling that he's scared.
Yeah.
Which is huge that the Ultimate Warrior scared of something.
Yeah.
But he wants to conquer that fear, and that's why he has reached out to Jake Roberts. Yeah. "Help me conquer this fear so that I'm no longer afraid, because I'm so good that I can't combat this bad without kind of getting a little bit."
It's
good storytelling, man. So he goes to Jake, and he says, "Help me." So he puts him in the coffin, and they do this whole thing, and he doesn't want to lay down.
Yeah.
Jake says, "Brother, you can walk away.
Yeah.
You asked me for my help."
Yeah, yeah. "You came to me.
You came to me for help. I didn't come to you.
Yeah.
You come to me for help, and I'm here helping you, and this is how we're going to do it. We're going to do it my way, or you can leave."
Right.
So he says, okay, and he lays back in the coffin. And it's great because then they give you a camera angle from inside the coffin looking up at Jake, and he leans over, and he goes, "That's it, my man." And he closes the coffin, and he locks him in, and the coffin starts shaking. And the Ultimate Warrior is trying to get out, and then he stops. And Jake goes, "You're starting to get it now. You're starting to relax. Just calm down. Breathe. This is not the end of the world."
Right.
You know, and he says, "You been in there long enough?"
"No, I don't think you've been in there long enough, man."
And lets him stay in there, and he finally takes him out. And there again, they go to the angle of the camera shooting up at Jake when the lid comes up, and he jumps back and he recoils.
Yeah.
And he goes, "That's it, man. You got the same look in your eye that the Undertaker's got in his eye." And Ultimate Warrior does the Undertaker setup. He sits up in the coffin and he looks at the camera and he's got this blank expression on his face.
Yeah.
Go to the next vignette. They're in a graveyard.
Yeah.
And Jake Roberts is walking through the graveyard. Yeah. And there's smoke everywhere.
Yeah.
He's talking, you know, that classic Jake the Snake
yeah.
stuff that really,
yeah.
I can do an awful impersonation yeah. of a lot of guys.
Yeah.
But I can't do an awful Jake Roberts impersonation because
yeah.
he's just, he's so unique.
Yeah.
The way he it's not about the way, he doesn't have a voice that's got a characteristic. It's the cadence and the way he talks.
Yes. Yes. Absolutely.
Jake Roberts could have been a star today.
Right.
So anyway, they go in the graveyard and he goes and Ultimate Warrior is digging a grave. And he goes, "Now you reach down there, man, and you get that thing, man." And he reaches down and he pulls a skull out. And he goes, "That's right, man. You look at that skull, but you got to trust me. Do you trust me? One more time." And Ultimate Warrior goes, "I trusted you once, Snake Man, you know, and I'll trust you now." And he buries the Ultimate Warrior alive with his head sticking out of the ground. And he takes the skull and he puts it in front of him. And he said, "Now you sit here and look in his dead eyes." And he walks away and he leaves him there buried. Then we get to the next vignette. And he says, "There's a room in there," which, if the ASPCA had been on site, there would have been some problems for what they did next.
Right.
There's in the ASPCA, the animal.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
There's a room in there with a box in it, and Lucifer's in that box, and he's got something for you. You got to go in there and get it. And it's got a glass, you know, window so he can look in. And he goes into the room, and there's snakes all over. Jake closes the door and locks it. And he says, "You got to trust me, Warrior.
Yeah.
I'm trying to help you.
Yeah.
You got to trust me. Do you trust me?"
Yeah.
You know, "Okay, Snake Man, I trust you." And he said, "Go to the box and open it up." And there's this big python on the ground, and the Ultimate Warrior kicks it. And I'm talking about this snake recoils and flips across the room. And even Jake at that point says, "Take it easy, man." Like he said it on the thing, "Take it easy, man. Don't hurt the snakes."
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, he called him down.
Yeah.
Don't do that.
Yeah.
So they go and he opens a box and a cobra pops up and bites the Ultimate Warrior in the face. And it's awful. This rubber prosthetic cobra that pops up, bites him in the face. He stumbles around, and Jake Roberts won't let him out. He said, "You feel it? Do you feel that poison rushing through your veins? You can feel it right now. Don't fight it. Just let it take over. Just let it take over." And he turns around, and he goes, "Ah, the man in black." And when he says that, a minute later, Warrior crashes through the door and falls down. And Jake Roberts is standing there, and he goes, just let it happen.
Yeah.
Just let it happen, man. Don't fight it. And you see Warrior start to crawl, and he reaches out, and he puts his hand on a black boot, and you hear, boom, and it's the Undertaker standing over him. And Jake Roberts walks over, and he goes, "Don't ever trust a snake, man."
Oh.
Because he had been saying, "Trust me, trust me, trust me," for weeks.
Yeah.
"Don't ever trust a snake, man."
Yeah.
And the Ultimate Warrior and Jake Roberts have set this up.
Yeah.
And Jake Roberts turned heel on the Ultimate Warrior.
Right.
Okay. Now.
Yeah.
Okay. This is a long story.
It's all good, man. And I'm telling you, you know, I am ignorant of everything Mark's saying. So I am sitting here. I'm hanging on every word you're saying. So, man, just, I want to know what, like, don't stop. Don't want to know what happened next.
So,
Papa, please go, finish the story.
If you want to see the rest of it, go to YouTube and check it out. I don't know.
That's all we got time for today,
wrestling fans. Okay. So, we're about halfway through our story now.
Yeah.
We get to SummerSlam.
Yeah.
The match made in heaven, the match made in hell.
Yeah.
Ultimate Warrior, behind the scenes, says to Vince McMahon, "If you don't give me $300,000, I'm not going out there and having this match."
Right.
there had been a Ultimate Warrior Jake Roberts feud planned.
Right.
From this.
Yeah.
If you don't give me $300,000, I'm not going to go out there and have the match.
Yeah.
So Vince says, okay.
Yeah.
They give him a check for $300,000, went out, had the match. He walked backstage and Vince McMahon fired him.
Right.
Ultimate Warrior is now gone, so that's superstar number one. We've had a babyface turn, a heel turn, and one superstar fired at this point. They have a reception, a wedding reception. And at the wedding reception, there's a present. They open the present, and it's a cobra. And it comes out on the top of the presents. It scares Elizabeth. Jake Roberts and The Undertaker come in. Attack Savage. They don't beat him down, they hit him, and it's really just it was just an evil, mean thing to do.
It's not like the red wedding off Game of Thrones.
Right. Right. Have you seen that? Did you say, oh, golly, man. That was one of those things that I wish somebody had said, spoiler, there's something going to happen, because I knew about it a little bit before it happened. I wish I had not.
Yeah.
But anyway, that was a heel turn. Greatest heel turns of all time.
Those Lannisters.
That was a great heel turn. So where am I at? Warrior just got fired. We just had a wedding reception. Okay, Sid Justice at the time, Sid Vicious, comes in. He makes a save, runs him off, which led to some Undertaker Sid stuff. But that's not what we want to talk about. Randy Savage had lost a match to Ultimate Warrior, if you remember.
He
couldn't wrestle anymore.
Yeah.
So Jake Roberts knows this.
Yeah.
And he starts to call him a coward.
Yeah.
And he starts to call him out. And Randy Savage has finally had enough.
Yeah.
Jake Roberts goads him into coming to the ring. He attacks him. And he pulls out a legitimate King Cobra.
Yeah.
That snake was massive.
Yes.
That was a scary, scary animal, man.
Yeah.
Tied Randy Savage up in the ropes and took this Cobra that had been devenomized.
Yeah.
And it bit Randy Savage. And this is not, they didn't fake this. The Cobra bit Randy Savage on the arm, and he started to bleed because the snake got stuck and it wouldn't let go.
Yeah.
If you can go listen to Jake Roberts' DVD, and he tells the whole story a lot better than I'm telling it right now.
Right.
But that snake wouldn't let go.
Yeah.
And it created some compelling television.
Yeah, because you're like, because you can see in their faces, oh, dear, this is not going as planned.
Right. There's those moments in wrestling when you say that you were shocked to find out it was real.
Yeah.
That's one of those moments. Like, when I found out that really happened, it blew my mind. Yeah. That's a commitment.
Because wrestling's fake,
man. You know? So, like, that blows my mind that went down. Well, because of that, Jack Tunney reinstated the Macho Man so he could get revenge on Jake Roberts. He said, okay, we're going to let you wrestle because this can't happen.
Right.
But he barred Jake from bringing the snake to the ring. Do you know why he barred Jake from bringing that big King Cobra? Because it died a few days later.
Really?
Yes. And they weren't going to buy another King Cobra.
Well, those things aren't cheap.
Yeah, they're not cheap, and it died. And it had been devenomized. And I think Randy Savage, they said behind the scenes, always joked that
he killed.
You know, that the snake got poisoned by biting him. Which probably it would have gotten poisoned if it had been the Ultimate Warrior.
Right,
It was going to get poisoned from biting anybody from all that stuff he had floating through his system.
Yeah.
But so anyway,
no,
they meet at Tuesday in Texas.
Yeah,
which if you remember, I don't want to say something wrong, but if I say something wrong, understand, I recapped and researched this, but I'm also working from memory on this.
Calling
stuff.
It in the ring,
right? I think Hulk Hogan and the Undertaker wrestled, and it's when Flair come down and put the chair out, and he give Undertaker Undertaker pile drove Hogan on the chair and won a title. And then Jack Tunney was getting more involved at this time. So the end of the match, the finish for Jake Roberts and Randy Savage, saw Savage hit him with Roberts hit him with a DDT.
Yeah.
Short ride, bad landing.
Yeah.
That's what Jake always said. It's a short ride with a bad landing, brother. So he hits him, and he hits him again, and Elizabeth comes in the ring.
Yeah.
And she, you know, blah, blah, blah. Please don't hurt him. She did the Miss Elizabeth hovering over. She will take a beating for Randy Savage if she's got to.
Right.
And he's telling her, you beg me, and I won't hurt him no more.
Yeah.
And he takes a bag out with a little snake, but it's not. There's no snake in it. The snake never makes an appearance because there is no snake
at
this point. The snake is dead. And, you know, he DDTs. I think he DDTs Savage 3 or 4 times. And she hovers over him, and he reaches down, and he grabs her by the hair, and he stands her up. He looks at her for a minute, and he smacks her, and she sold that slap. If you watch it back, you can tell clearly that he didn't slap her.
Right.
He very much protected her, and he slapped his own wrist to get the sound.
Yeah.
But she spun around.
Yeah.
Like he had just knocked the fool out of her.
Oh, Elizabeth was
fell down. And Elizabeth, man, just a word about her. She is the number one woman in wrestling of all time.
Right.
There's nobody that walked with more class and dignity. She didn't have to come out in no low-cut outfits. Right. She wasn't flaunting her sexuality all over the place.
Except
she
was the first SummerSlam.
Which even that is very tame.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I mean, she had on a mom bathing suit. Right, you know what I mean? It's not
she really did.
You know, I mean, it had they come up over her navel, you know. I mean, there wasn't a lot of skin showing or anything like that. I mean, it wasn't salacious.
Yeah.
So anyway, where are we at? He just slapped Elizabeth.
Slaps Elizabeth.
He went back and cut a promo. And it's one of the better wrestling promos ever where I'm trying to think of the right. I know the word, but I don't want to say the word because we're family friendly. Yeah. So you can probably figure it out. But man, when I got my hands on your woman.
Oh,
and I felt that slap on her face. Oh, I just want to feel it again. You know, and he delivers this creepy, creepy promo, which leads to another match.
Yeah.
Between him and Savage, and the finish is not. And I didn't watch this match. This is because the match itself is not important.
Yeah.
After the match, Jake Roberts is backstage. He's got a chair, and he says, "I don't care who comes through that curtain first. I'm gonna hit him with a chair."
Yeah.
And Miss Elizabeth, they're cutting back and forth. Miss Elizabeth's walking a few feet in front of Randy Savage, so we know at home when she walks through that curtain,
she's gonna
get a chair shot to the head.
Unprotected chair shot
to the head, man.
Yeah.
And just wish they did this kind of stuff now. They're creating tension by going back and forth.
Right.
And the announcers are not talking about downloading an app. The announcers are not going, hey, go check us out on Twitter. The announcers are going, somebody better let him know.
Yeah.
The announcers
aren't letting on that they know.
Right. You're right. The announcers are selling it like they're seeing it for the first time and they have no idea what's going to go on. And she goes through the curtain and he draws a chair back. And when he draws a chair back, you see this black hand come into frame and grab it, and it's the Undertaker. Mm. You're not hitting a woman.
Yeah.
So fast forward a few weeks, we get to a funeral parlor. Jake Roberts comes out, and he says, man, I need to know. I need to talk to your guy. He's talking to Paul Bearer, and we hadn't seen the Undertaker yet.
Yeah.
I need to talk to the Undertaker and find out what's going on. Music hits. The Undertaker's fixing to come out to talk to Jake Roberts about what's going on. The Undertaker, and you see behind Roberts a coffin open, and the Undertaker steps out of the coffin. Jake Roberts flips around and he goes, I need to know just who the heck you think you are, and whose side are you on, man?
Right.
And the Undertaker goes, not yours. Jake Roberts gets mad. He takes the urn from Paul Bearer. He throws the urn in a casket. Undertaker goes over, picks the urn up out of the casket, and lays his hand down on the rim, and Jake Roberts slams the lid of the casket down on his hand and locks it. So he's got his hand has now been slammed into a casket, and he can't get it loose, and he DDTs Paul Bearer on the floor.
Oh, man.
And the Undertaker grabs the coffin, pulls it off of the thing, and starts walking towards Roberts, reaching out for him. And Jake picks up a chair and hits him with it, and he goes down. And then he gets back up, and he starts following Roberts. And he takes him down again, and he starts following Roberts again.
Right.
So the Undertaker turns heel. I don't need to tell – or the Undertaker turns babyface. I'm sorry. I don't need to tell you how big that is.
Yeah.
That leads us to WrestleMania 8.
Yeah.
Undertaker versus Jake Roberts.
Right.
Undertaker – is very new.
Yeah.
Undertaker now, most respected guy in the locker room.
Right.
At the time, Undertaker was just like anybody else coming in to the WWF.
Yeah.
he's just kind of doing what the veteran says.
Yeah.
And they had had an idea to do a pile driver on the floor.
Yeah.
The tombstone on the floor. And they said no.
Yeah.
You know, Pat Patterson, Vince McMahon said, no, we're not going to do that. Well, Jake went to The Undertaker and said, look, I just talked to him. They said it was okay. You can give me the, you know, we can do it on the floor. They're not, they're okay with it. I convinced him, but he hadn't.
Right.
So, gives him the thing, blah, blah, blah. Undertaker goes 2-0 at WrestleMania to begin the streak, because the streak doesn't begin with 1-0.
Right.
That's just a victory at WrestleMania.
Yeah.
The streak started at WrestleMania 8 against Jake Roberts when he goes 2-0.
Yeah.
And Jake Roberts got fired for lying to the, about the, I think that's why he got fired. I think it was a multitude of reasons.
Right.
That was the final straw.
This was before he went to the accountability.
Right. This
accountability
was before he got into DDPs, whatever, that they got going on. Like, so anyway, that is the story of two babyface turns, one heel turn, and two WWF superstars getting fired.
And Undertaker really, since then, I mean, he's been...
Just like Sting.
That was the first time
once he went,
was cheered.
Yeah, right.
And even though he's been, you know, they had the ministry and the corporate ministry and all that stuff where he was, people
cheered. Yeah, he's still a baby face. Yeah, he'll never be a heel. Yeah.
Even if he acts bad.
Yeah, they still cheer for everything he does.
Right, right. Let me tell you when.
Did I do okay telling that story?
Dude, I just knew bits and pieces of that and. I think you laid it out perfect, and the way you laid it out is that was captivating. I mean, it is. There was
that's a year. Players. That's by the way, that's one WrestleMania to the next.
Right, right.
Just so you're aware, that started at WrestleMania 7, culminated at WrestleMania. I think it's 7. I think it was 7 and 8.
I mean, you're not talking about. Hey, you know, we're going to take Ric Flair out in the middle of the desert and bury him. And bring back 3 weeks and never tell you how he, you know what I mean?
Everything mattered.
Even if it was logical, even in the unbelievable stuff.
Right. Like, right. Nobody was getting bit by an animal that actually had venom glands in it. And I knew that. I
didn't.
Well, that's true.
I thought, Randy Savage is going to die. We got to get an anti-venom kit. What in the world?
Somebody call a crocodile hunter, man.
They're going to have to get a tourniquet and suck the venom out. If you're listening to this, you know, this is the end of part two. We've ended up doing this a two-part episode because we wanted to do it justice. Like we don't want to cut our content just to fit into a time slot.
That's right.
Because we don't do that.
That's right. We don't do that here.
That's right.
When you go see a Grateful Dead show, you don't tell those guys to cut it short after 3 minutes, man. You want to hear a 15-minute jam.
Right. Right. You don't go and tell them, hey, I got to be home. No, 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 no. And the same thing with us. You don't say, listen.
You are so much better at this stuff than I am.
So, listen, again, this has been a long conversation, two-part conversation on what we feel the greatest face turn. My hope is that you understand our passion for this business.
For our industry, if you will.
Like, this...
For many times you will hear this Heath Mulligan say, for him, there is no rule. And I say, for me, there is no law.
We do not, how you say, keep a time limit. You don't come in here.
You know, David Crocker, you don't tell Nikita how long he talked. Nikita tell you how long he talk.
Me and Nikita, when we come here from Kremlin, we talk as long as we want to talk. I be Bruno Sammartino.
So anyway, we hope our passions come through, and we really appreciate you listening. Again, doubledropkick.com, lots of links, lots of banners. There's actually a link at the top of the show that says support the show, and just click on that, and again, it's just an extra click. You're not paying any extra money to buy stuff, but it's just
30 seconds of your time keeps bringing you quality entertainment like we just provided for
quality,
you.
Quality, family, entertainment.
Do you see how I censored myself on that last story?
You did great.
I mean, there were words I could have used, and you'd known exactly what I was talking about, yeah. But I think I sold it without you, you know.
You did it. You did it. And so, just, I mean, I love, you know, being able to do this show, and we've got a lot of great things coming up for you. Our next show that we're going to do is we have taken – well, I don't want to give it – we're our dream Starrcade
match.
That's
it. Don't tell them what we did. Just tell them what it is.
It's our dream.
As a matter of fact, I would do – like I used to love it when they would do on wrestling. Yeah. It's just kind of cut this right in the middle of one of us talking.
Yeah. So here's what we're going to do. So anyway, you'll have to tune in. You can go to iTunes and download us. You can – on the podcast app. We got people listening to us on PlayStation 3. Listen, the more you download us on iTunes especially, it helps our – we want to get up there. Like when you click on sports podcast and Bill Simmons' BS report is number one, Dumb Dropkick Show, we won't be number two.
No, we want to be number one.
We want to be
I'm not settling for number two.
I don't want
to be number one,
I don't
want
to be the national heavyweight champion. No, I want to be the world
That's right.
Champion.
I'm not a Western States Heritage champion, Heath.
Worst title.
I don't care. I don't care about being the face of podcasting. I want to be the champion of podcasting.
Oh, yeah. There you go. And again, if you want to talk about and you want to listen to the wrestling you grew up with, Double Dropkick Show, we're the only one. Again, call us. Leave us a message. 864-952-1893. Again, this has been the Double Dropkick Show. I'm Heath Mulliken.
And, hey, reminding you always, say your prayers, take your vitamins, believe in yourself, do your training. I'm Mark Whitman.
Hey, fans, that's all the time we got for. Oh, we got to get out of here. We'll see you next week.
Heath, you and Mark better not leave any Star Crunch wrappers down in that basement.